Why have I quit my job? Why have I, you know, bought a van? And why am I going to drive around the country? Well, I'm passionate about the idea that you need to be heard. And I want to stitch these stories together across the states. We're going to find the commonalities. And it's going to be really an amazing experience. And I look forward to you joining me on the job.
Still loving that music. Welcome, hey, everybody. Welcome back to Mental Health Today. I'm your host, Ken. And that little video is I've kind of explained it many times on the show, really was me almost 2 years ago anticipating or kind of pontificating what I might find as I traveled across the U.S. and interviewed people. And ultimately, that was mental health, which launched the JAR Foundation. You can see who sponsors this show right now. But of course, we're always looking for sponsors, real sponsors, other than sponsoring my own sponsor. And so Mental Health Today was born as a podcast to really find out what people are doing in the mental health space. I started a foundation on mental health, which I knew absolutely zero about, either a foundation or mental health. And so the best thing I thought to do was to get people who are in the space, professionals, to come on and share what they do, not just for myself, but for other, you know, kind of other newbies like me. And as part of this project, we've also partnered with Moonnox, and Moonnox is an AI company, and they're helping us build a kind of proprietary database of all the transcripts for this show are put into one database, and it becomes kind of a searchable database for people to either find a show that would interest them or like a specific topic, or to kind of stitch those topics together as the portfolio grows. Dr. Randall Janney, welcome to Mental Health Today. Thanks for being guest. Thanks for carving some time out of your late afternoon on the West Coast here.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you for having us, Ken.
Yeah, just it was a kind of a good little pre-chat. I've got that fondness, you know, I got that fondness for Washington. As I mentioned, I started my journey there and had a couple of really great interviews. I may even take my first guest, pastor. And have him interview me as the last interview. You know, I could be the 445 or I could be 444. Wow. That would be something special. So I'll finish it up and maybe I'll finish it up in Washington. But hey, this is all about you guys. You know, Mental Health Today, this really is about what do we see the crisis being? You know, you've been in it for a long time. You've got the books going. We've got veteran work. We've got different modalities. So it's a really good mix of some background. So maybe start off, tell us a little bit about yourselves, what you guys are up to, what you're doing now. And maybe we'll get into a little bit of history, but I like to talk about what you're doing today.
Absolutely. I'll be fast. So my name is Jenny Hansen. I work for Heroic Hearts Project, which is a nonprofit that helps veterans struggling with post-traumatic stress symptoms. And we help them access psychedelic retreats where they are legal in both Central and South America. We find that that particular substance, which is called ayahuasca, which is what we work with, is very effective in treating PTS symptoms. So we have veterans who are really struggling from the past 20 years of conflict and war in Afghanistan, and they're coming to our program because they are seeking help, mental health help, and they're not really receiving the care that they need via other systems. So we're kind of like a Hail Mary, a last resort for many of them.
It's a couple now. I just had one other guest very recently also working in the space trying to help with the money aspect of it to find the treatment. And a couple of people now that are doing the guides that are kind of training the guides and the work, because they can see that that's going to be a thing, right? There are going to be more and more guides. Why do you think, I mean, this is such an interesting thing. Like, why does it work? I don't know why I thought of that question, but it's like the, why is that working?
To me, the science is the coolest part.
Yeah. You know, I guess that's what I'm saying is what's going on.
Yeah. So what the traditional psychedelics do is they quiet the default mode network, which is for an easy way to think about it, is kind of our ego, our sense of self, the thing that the voice that keeps telling us, yes, do that or don't do that in our head. And what the psychedelics do is they quiet the default network down and allow other parts of the brain that are still always communicating but are quieted by the default mode network to allow it to communicate. And we can actually have, you know, much deeper understanding of what's in our brain through this use of psychedelics. So that's the main thing it does. And I'd say the geeky part, if you look at the brain scans, you can see different parts of the brain lighting up that normal with psychedelics that aren't lit up without psychedelics. And then the other part that I am blown away, we've had several people with OCD, and one of the stories, the woman talks about it being like a hamster wheel.
Yes.
And that hamster wheel keeps getting grooved deeper and deeper and deeper.
Yes.
So anytime you step there, you're just on that path.
Yeah, yeah.
And what the psychedelics seem to do is find that groove. Somehow it knows that it's not an effective group, not a good group, and just remove that. So there are some people that take psychedelics and the next day that anxiety that OCD is completely gone, because the psychedelics also increase brain neuroplasticity, brain growth. So all these things that we're learning now in research is just fascinating.
So it's even a physical change, potentially repairing that rut.
Yes.
Those ruts that you drive over and over around and around, or the hamster wheel.
Yep.
I mean, that's powerful, right? Yeah. When they're lighting up the other parts of the brain. So, I mean, I've taken my fair share of acid. Mm-hmm. I've taken my fair share of psilocybin, never ayahuasca. But that part of destroying, you know, peeling away the ego is really part of the journey, right? And that's part of the good part, the scary part. But in lighting up, so I guess if my question is, especially for veterans and PTSD, is it that repairing that's happening, or is it letting the ego go away? And that obviously those conversations are stupid. Unless you're, you know, unless in a normal state, those are the dumbest conversations. So is it the ego going away and then the rest of the brain saying, all right, dumb butt, that's a stupid conversation. We know it's stupid. Or is it the other parts of the brain waking up and highlight, like, that's kind of repairing the conversation? I don't know if that makes sense as a question.
Yeah, it's kind of both. I don't know if you want to jump in. Let me just say one thing. It's also in the psychedelic, the psychedelics, you know, everyone talks about, especially those who've done it recreationally, you know, the cool geometric patterns and all that. But when you go deeper and intentionally with psychedelics, you actually see things. So for veterans, they can be taken right back to that explosion and see it, but they see it in a way that's not traumatizing. The psychedelics reduces that. That element, and so they can witness it, and then the key for them is incorporating that new learning about this incident, not the emotional part of it, but the intellectual part. It's almost like they watch a movie of that incident rather than them that they were there.
They're an observer of their own experience rather than re-experiencing it all over again.
So yeah, I totally get that.
It's a neutral position, a non-judgmental position in which to see that trauma
and to see them and to have some grace for themselves in
like,
and it's not your fault. Like, yeah, it's not your fault.
We need that grace.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It's a little bit of a cliche term or adage in our space right now, but many people, including the veterans, say after their experience, wow, it was similar or tantamount to 7 years of psychotherapy in just one or two sittings with this medicine.
Absolutely. Oh, for sure.
It's incredible.
Yeah. The other thing I want to mention is quickly, you know, some people get scared to hear ego death. and those yes. are new to psychedelics and they get scared. Wait, I need an ego. And so I just want to clarify, the psychedelics temporarily reduces that ego. It doesn't, yeah. it doesn't dissolve. It doesn't get rid of it. And it's part of your work when it comes back, when you get done with the psychedelic experience to integrate this new learning with the ego. And so it's you definitely lose some of that ego for sure. I mean, I can speak to that personally that, but it's not gone because we wouldn't be able to function without it. So it's just a temporary reduction so we can get the healing done.
I kind of felt like it was peeling away the layer, like an ego as layers.
Yeah.
And so I think, you know, you're peeling away some of those fake layers or the dead skin and you're getting kind of down to the new you or the better version of you. And you're kind of scraping away. So maybe, I think the ego death is probably the wrong phrase.
Yeah. Maybe ego refinement or ego.
Yeah.
Something renewal or something. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cause you're, but so you're, it does sound crazy, but it does feel like, I mean, it does feel a bit violent when you're in it because you are literally peeling some of that back, right? You're exposed, like your ego does go away. It definitely takes a reduced role and you're having a different conversation. But definitely not something to be scary about. And when and slowly the medicine wears off and you're kind of back to normal.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the other thing that I like to talk about. You know, I'm an educator by everything. I think I was born an educator. Yes. So the other thing is, yes, there may be challenging experiences. You might have forgotten something that happened to you and it's going to come up and it might surprise you that it happened. But as long as you do the intentional preparation, that's the key. And so I also try to get rid of some of the drug war language. So a lot of people call it a bad trip, certainly with LSD that was associated. But no, challenging trip maybe. But again, like you said, it's just temporary while you're in the medicine and everyone comes out of the medicine. So.
And they say the medicine shows you what you need to see, may not be what you want to see. But if you're going to move past that trauma, you have to trust that medicine is going to show you that thing that you need to face in order to move through.
Yeah.
And we see that happening with our vets all the time. And we do retreats with psilocybin as well. Right now we're conducting specific observational retreats for TBI or head trauma with the vets right now.
Yeah.
So we're in the midst of doing that as well. So psilocybin also is very powerful in bringing about the healing that Ran is talking about, helping people to face that trauma and to move through it.
How are you getting how do we fund this? Because this is it's an unfunded thing. And I did have one guest on for a while that was trying to raise money and that was their sole purpose. Their whole nonprofit was just to get that money and to get it to people like yours hands.
Right.
Right.
That's the challenge because we are dealing with at least they're illegal substances in the United States. They're Schedule I substances, all of them. And so therefore we want to make sure as a nonprofit registered that we are in the legal black zone, I guess you could say. So that's why use legal retreats outside of the states. Therefore the funding is, we're all donation based. It costs about $5,000 to send one veteran on a full retreat. And that's including coaching ahead of time as preparation and coaching afterward for integration. So we're really working on the legislative side of things. We have our veterans speak at Capitol Hill and other events like that, where they can really voice the concern and the need for these substances to be rescheduled, or descheduled, I should say.
Yeah.
So the access is greater and we can get the research going and really prove that they are healing modalities.
The CIA has all the research already.
Right.
Well, you think about, there was just a news report last week that we lost an F-35 in North Carolina. They've now recovered it. But the cost of that jet, just think how many veterans could be healed if that money were just given, donated to all these nonprofits, or if the VA actually eventually, hopefully, will get into this with psychedelics and healing. But that's the problem. We all these nonprofits, need these donations just to help save these veterans. And it pulls at the heartstrings, but we have to pull at the purse strings as well.
Yeah, you got to find the money. I mean, none of this happens without the money, right? You got to fly people somewhere. I mean, it's ridiculous because it's not even, can't even do it in the States legally, especially like you said, you're a nonprofit. You got to super, super clean for now. The financial side. And this is an interesting, you talk about the intentionality, and I think it is a good conversation. I interviewed recently somebody in Denmark, he's in Europe, and he's taken a couple thousand people on trips. Because it's been legal there forever.
In the Netherlands or something.
And so he's been doing this for, you know, 10 years, something like this. Just been taking people. And our conversation, he educated me on that process of intentionality. And I didn't realize, I had heard that. And that's part of the conversation with a couple of people in different, either ketamine or maybe even psilocybin conversations. But I never really thought, I actually kind of was like a little bit goofy about it. Like I'm like, in high school, we put it on pizza and then we went to a party. We went to a dead show and I was high as fook, and you know, and I thought I saw a helicopter crash, and then you know, I saw the zenith. But that was party stuff, like festival acid.
And
now to understand what you're really doing, which is really sitting down to heal something, and it's intentional. That's a whole, and then you go lay down in a bed, right? And you're gonna go led somewhere, and you're gonna focus on what you, the answers you want, or what you want the medicine to show you.
That's very different.
That's set and setting. So set is short for mindset, and then setting, which is vital to an intentional psychedelic experience. So when you go into a psychedelic journey with intention, it will change the way the medicine acts inside of you.
Yes.
Because you're actually using your head, you're using your brain. I have this intention, I'm writing it down.
Yes.
You're preparing for it. And then you're opening yourself up and you're trusting the medicine to do the work.
You're calling
that's why the setting is so important. Safe, private, comfortable.
Oh. Yeah. And I was doing, you know, music, dancing, drinking, totally different intention.
Yeah.
And that's okay. There's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not necessarily going to bring you. It's not for healing from trauma. It's not for healing. You're having a good time.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, you know, a good time plus plus. You know, with all, like all, you know, with all the, everything, with the lights looking brighter and everything greener. Well, that has been a big change for my understanding. And I've been doing this for 6 months. And, you know, and it just happened the other day where I was like, oh, there's a difference. I get it now. Yeah. It really set with me, I should say.
Good, good. Well, let me add one more to that. A big element of this also is community. And there's a story in my first book about a guy who accidentally did a ketamine journey. And in his journey, the medicine said he was a drug addict and everything, you know, he was taking everything.
Oh, okay.
And in the journey, the medicine said, you don't need to take these drugs anymore. You have a healing within you. And he came out of this journey all excited. And he looked around the room and all the people were passed out from taking heroin. And it took him about 2 more years to finally get off the drugs. Because community, when we talk about community, that could be, it could be a coach, it could be a therapist, but it also is people around you. You know, we speak from experience, you know, in our families, if you say psychedelic, you know, there's a pin, you can hear a pin drop because everyone stops talking. So for us, our family is not community because they're not necessarily supportive of the psychedelic experience. So you need to find people. And so there are psychedelic societies all across the world. A lot of them go through Meetup. So you can go to meetup.org or com and type in, you know, Reno or Las Vegas Psychedelic Society or Spokane Psychedelic Society. And you can find people that are like-minded, and that might be a way to build community, but it's so important.
But this gentleman finally, 2 years later, after finding community and finding the support that he'd so needed and got away from the negative influence of his friends, that's when he found healing.
Yeah.
Because when he came out of that experience initially, he felt completely alone and unsupportive, and none of the friends wanted to help him. So that's why community matters.
Yeah.
What a confusing message. Because you're the one you've received this message.
Right.
And like you said, you come out of the ketamine and you look around the room and you're like, nobody in here is getting off whatever.
Exactly. Yep. Exactly. Yeah.
And could you imagine him coming out and going, hey, I just got off my ketamine and I had a voice tell me, I'm fine. I can do this. He looks around.
What are you talking about? Yeah. Right. So that was really profound for him to finally find his people and his tribe and get that support.
And the other interesting thing about psychedelics, my focus is, and I think Jen's too, is really on the healing aspect, because we, it's not just veterans that have PTS, and certainly we are definitely in a mental health crisis. There's no question. But other elements of it that are really intriguing to me are the spirituality elements.
Yeah. Almost
everyone that has a psychedelic experience comes away with a sense of there's a greater power. It might not be God or Allah or whatever, but it is, even people that have been, there's no God, there's nothing, I live, I die, that's it, come away from a psychedelic experience saying, wow, no, there's more to this, and it's amazing. And so I want to make sure we, talk about that as well. It's not, yes, the healing is important, and maybe someone would call that spiritual healing, but there's a spiritual component to it as well.
I would call that spiritual healing or awakening. I mean,
awakening. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And even for people who have some belief in God, like believe in God, go in, you have a different, when you have a psychedelic experience and you touch God, or you have that kind of spiritual side of it. Because I've had different versions. I've had many where that doesn't come up, where your ego does some things, but I've had a couple experiences where you can't explain it. I can't explain it to you, but if you've been there and you've seen it, there is God.
Yeah.
And I'll just put the word God.
Yeah.
Because that's all I could, that's the word. You just say, you see it, and you're like, duh, I seen God. Yep, that's a real thing.
Yeah.
Out there.
I love in Triumph Over Trauma, there's a Hunt priest who's a minister who went through the Johns Hopkins religious leader study program or trials. He felt, even though he was an ordained priest, successful many years, he felt like he was ordained by God in his journey. And he actually spoke in tongues. He doesn't remember that, but the researchers told him that he was just speaking, so just amazing things happen in these journeys.
I mean, even priests don't know. They can believe, they can have faith, they can be the strongest faith. I don't know what kind of words you can use past strongest, double strong, 10x strong. I mean, you can have whatever your level of faith is, doesn't matter. You don't know.
Yeah.
But there is something about seeing and feeling and experiencing it psychedelically that you don't even need to believe anymore.
Yeah.
I think it instills a sense of peace too in the journeyer.
Yeah.
Just being aware of that gives you a sense of peace. Oh, there is something greater out there, whatever that looks like.
Jen, I think that's an absolutely great point, right? You do have a complete sense of peace. Yeah. I'm trying to think of grace was a word coming to mind again, but grace for the greater good. You have a different, this peace is it's going to be okay. I know it's chaotic, but it's actually, there's a plan. It's kind of like, oh, I saw the blueprint. It's going to be fine.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love what one veteran said. I think peace and love and grace and things like that come up in journeys. But he said, if I had had this psychedelic experience earlier in my life, I wouldn't have even signed up for the military, because you have this sense of Why would I want to kill my brother or my sister? Because that, again, this psychedelic experience, you realize we are connected. It's not us versus them, you know?
Yeah.
And you see the weird, like I would immediately see, like, as you were described that, you immediately, like you were saying about seeing things in your mind, and I'll come back to that with a, I think you would see the matrix of who decides who goes where.
Yeah.
I'm being sent to go kill my brother by some other weird dude who's pissed off at some other weird dude, and we're crossing these borders. Like and why am I shooting at these people? What the hell's going on?
Yeah.
And you'll see that neural network of decisions. Yep. And it won't resonate when you're in that space.
Yep.
Right. Just a quick aside. So many vets who have gone through the Heroic Hearts program come out the other side, having healed, of course, and wanting to give back with a fervent passion. And they become a coach themselves. And now we have 40 plus coaches helping their fellow veterans go through the program. So it's just
really
all giving it back and giving it back. It's a beautiful thing to witness.
Yeah.
There's nothing like a brother turning around to help another brother, right? Reaching. Yeah. I mean, if the arm reaching out is another vet. Yeah.
Yep.
Feel comfort. Yeah. I'll put my hand out.
Yeah. It's beautiful.
And the language they would use. Same. What about the new book? What's coming on? What's next? What's cooking now?
Yeah. So the new book is going to come out in November. It's called Heal. And partly I learned from Triumph Over Trauma that people don't like the word trauma in a book title. But the other thing I learned in this process is that there are so many other healing modalities. Yes, psychedelics are fantastic for getting right to the root cause. But so many people, even with psychedelics, use meditation, use breath work, nature. We also talk about exercise and movement, somatics, and then even nutrition. All these things work together for healing. And so the new book lays out all these modalities. I called it holistic with a W, because the idea is that you heal the whole self. And that's why healmewhole.com is the website.
Better than H-O-L-E, right?
Yeah, exactly. We're climbing out of the hole.
Yeah.
We're not in the, we're, we have, the holes are bad.
Yes. Yeah.
Holes are bad. Ruts are bad. This is the kind of stuff that I am seeing in the conversations, people talking about the food, the health, the brain gut connection now is not just some woo woo science. It's legit. And we know now how it works. Fascinating. Magnetic therapy on a brain for TMI, right? Traumatic TBI, traumatic brain injury. They're using magnetic as well to help kind of repair. So interesting.
Yeah,
the key is, with the second book, the key is there are all these healing modalities out there. You might not know all of them.
Okay.
Just get on a healing journey. Just take that first step to say, I am going to try to find healing. And then that's easy. That's the first step. That's all you have to do for that first step on the journey. And then, find the right modality or combination of modalities that are going to work for you.
I think it's good. That's a good way to start. That's a good close for a book, right? Is just start. I'm a giant fan of momentum.
Yeah.
It's hard to stop something that's in motion.
Yep.
It takes energy to stop somebody in motion. So once you start down that healing journey, I mean, especially if you're listening, I think take Rand's advice, start somewhere.
Yeah.
And you'd be amazed as someone who's just starting out on a healing journey, how many doors start to open for you.
Yes.
It's as if you just making that decision, you are shifting energy to make doors open for you to continue down that path. It is truly magic. I've seen it happen over and over and over. So just make the decision. And it's like, you're telling the universe, okay, I'm ready. I'm going to do this.
Yeah. And I mean, I have a story in the book where the person was like, all right, I've decided, enough people have told me that I don't have the right reactions. You know, she didn't still think she needed a healing journey, but she had these outbursts. So something was going on and her friends were.
Okay.
And so she said, okay, I'm going to take that first step. And then out of the blue, a friend says, hey, there's a meditation workshop, this retreat that I'm going to. And the friend I was going to go with just canceled. So I have an open spot. You want to come with me? And she's like, okay. And that started her, that was the final, the big push to, for her healing journey. So like Jen said, it is, it sounds a little woo-woo in the sense of, oh yes, but it really does happen. It really does happen.
I can totally resonate with what you said, Jen. Absolutely what you said. As soon as you put your intention out there, and when you say it, and boy, if you act on something, then the and universe is like, oh, they're really serious. Whoa, they took our first breadcrumb.
Yep.
Hey, you know, like red alert. All right, get on down.
I love it. Yes.
You know, there's like one little helper down there waiting for us to kind of wake up. You know, when we say something and they give us a breadcrumb, probably we miss it. But if we pick it up, I do think it is like a little bit of an alert system, you know, that we've got another one waking up.
Yeah,
I agree.
I love it. I love that image.
Yeah, and we're running around, alarm bells going to fire. You're like, yay, we got another one. Yeah. But it's true, though. I think as soon as you put your intention out there, things just, I mean, the universe just goes to work for you. And you see that, I think you do see that on some of the psychedelic experiences. You can see the connectivity. And it's not, no one ever comes out of that experience saying the world's out to get me.
No. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right.
No, the world is embracing me is what they get when they say come out.
Right. And so, you know, we live in a world of the world's out to get me, right? This guy cut me off. The traffic light changed colors at the wrong time. I missed it. You know, everything, there's always a million things. And this is a place where you come out and you're like, holy cow, the whole universe is set up for me to be happy and successful.
Yeah.
And self-love. I hear so many accounts
and
of
self-love.
I do deserve love. I am love. I can give to myself and I can give it back to others. And for me as an empath is such a beautiful thing to see.
The self-love thing is so tough.
Yeah.
Couple of my last JAR interviews, you know, we get one of my, one of my questions is self. I've got a few in there about self-love. And I always even almost ask the question somehow, some way, do you love yourself? Have you got to that place? Mm. And, you know, it's so tough when people are like,
yeah.
And indeed.
They're struggling, man. I mean, we're all, a lot of us, you know, and even me as goofy as I am, you know, at times it won't be there. It's like, I want it. But man, what a tough one, right? When you really like, and people are honest about it. It's tough. Like that's real human contact. Like, do you love yourself? So I'm working on it, man.
Yep.
And that's to because, me, you know, the easiest.
If you don't have self-love, you don't allow anyone else to love you either. And you have, a lot of times you have people in your life that do love you, but you can't accept it because you have to find it yourself.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, Rand, that was a conversation, exact conversation we had today. He's like, I got a loving wife and she tells me, I love you. And I'm like, but why? I'm like, oh my, cause you're a good person. Like you're a lovable, like, oh my God. Like being an empath, I'm a bit empathic as well. It's like, I mean, that just hurts my soul when I hear that, right? Yeah. That somebody is at the place where they're not even given. I mean, like that's the kind version. I'm sure when it's late at night and they're having doubts, it's not even self-love. It's self-loathing.
Yeah.
I mean, like, the dark side of that's not nice.
No.
Yeah. Yeah. I think part of what's behind that is there's a lot of comparison syndrome, at least with the veterans.
Mm.
My battle buddy was injured so much more severely than I. So therefore I don't deserve treatment. He deserves to be helped and not me. Which I just want to tell everyone out there, please do not compare your trauma to anyone else's. It is real to you.
Yeah.
Whatever it may be, if you think it's small or no, it is real to you and should be treated as such with respect and acknowledgement. everyone is deserving of healing. Everyone.
Yeah. Another example of that real quickly is just we had a domestic violence person who was abused in a domestic violence situation. And she said, I think I have PTSD, but isn't that just for soldiers? And it just kind of broke my heart because,
oh man,
it's like, again, like Jenny said, we all have experienced trauma in our lives and we can't compare it. And we just need to heal from it. That's the big message that we need to get out there.
Yeah. PTSD. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's a real thing. And it's life gives you it. Yeah. Shoot. I had it from a job.
Yeah.
I mean, I can for sure say, after I quit that job and I laid down for 20 minutes and then stared at the ceiling for 6 months later, I woke up 6 months later, still staring at the ceiling. I mean, not exactly, but you know, figuratively, that's kind of what it was. It was really a 6 month process to kind of, you know, shake out of it. And the only way I shook out of it was getting another job. Roll into another PTSD scene. Exit that one into another one.
No.
Don't want that.
You don't want that. That is, but I think it's a real thing for a lot of people, right? You wake up. Yeah. I mean, look at, why do you die after you retired? I mean, you all of that stuff unloading and unwinding while you're sitting at home staring at the TV, not watching the TV. You're staring at the TV, but you probably don't know what's on.
Right.
And I think it's just all that weight of everything that you've seen, and you're just playing those movies over and over again of all your corporate life.
Yeah. Well, let me just add too. There's no age limit to healing. Mm-hmm. You know. You can heal at 22. You can heal at 82. Just go out and heal and live your best life for whatever years you have left. I mean, it's just start the healing process.
How about the end of life psilocybin and so the psilocybin or even ayahuasca? Have you done any of this, or have you looked at this? Some of the end of life treatments allowing people to kind of see the other side, like a preview of your exit, I guess.
I don't work directly in that realm. I have worked with facilitators who are death doulas, as they call themselves. Yeah. And you know what? It's actually beautiful, beautiful work. Done with respect and compassion. And the facilitator will help guide this person during their end of life stage using psychedelic medicine. Typically psilocybin, but yes. Sorry, go ahead.
No, that's great. No.
Yeah.
It's out there. It's happening. Yeah. I know that there are some states fighting for legislation around that. I think Oregon has a right to life or right to die.
Yeah.
Statute.
Yeah.
Don't quote me on that. I'm not as
well. No, they do.
Yeah.
They have a right to die, but I don't know about this. I don't know about the psilocybin part.
Although Oregon's the more progressive with plant medicines, but
I think people have to go underground for these services at the moment.
Yeah,
unfortunately.
Yeah,
the good news is there are guides and facilitators that do this work, and it is. I mean, again, just knowing what the psychedelics do and this sense of closeness to God and seeing that we're all connected, I think that is such a uplifting message when you are facing death and you know, literally we all are facing death. It's, you know, those are closer to it, but to have that sense of peace that, you know, I am going some, my soul is going to go somewhere else. We don't know.
Yes.
You know, no one knows what
can
that
see.
Is.
I can
the psychedelics help that.
Mm-hmm. Especially what we talked about earlier with the intentionality.
Yes.
Yes.
I just see such a huge difference between, you know, festival intention and taking medicine and laying down with the thought of what you want to accomplish and what you want to, you know, see and feel and experience. Yeah. And if you're doing that with a doula and your end of life, you have a lot of different questions. It's a way different question, right? Your whole intention is very different.
Yes.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But there are some documentaries out there. I can send them to you when the show is done.
Oh, wow.
of folks who have gone through end-of-life treatment. They have terminal cancer or some other illness like that. And every single one says, I am so thankful for the experience or experiences, depending on the person. Some have more than one psychedelic journey, but they are no longer fearful of death. They now accept their condition and they can live the rest of their days alive here on this earth with peace and knowing that there's love instead of living in fear and anxiety, which is immense. I mean, that sounds beautiful to me. That's how I would like to go, is feeling that way. So yeah, it's wonderful to witness.
It's just a wild thing to think that you're going to end your life, right? When, and you're at that spot and you get a chance to peek over the wall.
Mm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's like looking inside. It's like looking inside kindergarten before you go for your first day when you're five.
Yeah.
That's, you know, just take some of the, take some of the stress off.
Yeah.
Indeed.
Oh, it's been a great chat. Really interesting conversation. Thanks for taking time out in the kind of early evening to sit with us and share.
Of course.
Love the book stuff. I'll send you a note, make sure to grab some of your social media stuff. So when I do the audio post, we get that stuff. Anything, any kind of closing thoughts or any message you want to, lost you a little bit.
Lost you for a second. Are we back on your end?
My connection was unstable. Can you hear me now?
I can hear you. Fine. I can see you. Yep. You're fine.
I think we're back. Okay.
Okay.
Yes. I just want to,
I was going
to
open you up for some closing thoughts.
Yeah.
Yes. Please, if anyone has questions, I am an open book. I'm happy to, I love to chat on the phone and educate folks. They can reach out to me on LinkedIn. Or at Heroic Hearts Project. It's Jenny at heroicheartsproject.org. And it's Jenny spelled J-E-N-N-Y. Please shoot me an email. If you just have questions, you're curious, you want to know more about the different substances, I would love to chat.
Hmm.
Yeah. And I would just say the same. They can find me on LinkedIn, both Triumph Over Trauma and Heal Me Whole. The other great part of both these books, there are in Triumph Over Trauma, there are 23 stories of healing, of transformation, of both macro and micro dosing psychedelics. And then in Heal, the new book, there are going to be 10 or 11 stories of using multiple modalities for healing. So again, just please start that healing journey. That would be my last word.
Yeah, and those are good words. I mean, that's, I think that's my biggest phrase. Just start the journey.
Yeah.
Take
the
first step, pick up the phone, you know, call somebody, especially this kind of suicide prevention month. This is a time to reach out and get some help. There's a lot of people online. There's a lot of people looking to help right now.
Yeah.
And, you know, just to pimp that message.
Oh, I love that shirt. Oh, that's beautiful. I want one of those.
You want one? Tomorrow needs you. This is a gentleman I just interviewed today on The Jar. Oh. And hard part of the story is that's a shirt made for his daughter who killed herself, took her own life, hung herself in his garage. And he's turning it into, trying to turn it into something.
Mm-hmm.
It's a brutal story. I mean, so difficult. Like, heart check, like heartbreaking.
Yeah.
But this is it. I mean, he's turned it into something. It's his whole, you know, I'm kicking suicide's ass.
Yeah. That is the amazing thing. You know, there are so many tragedies that I've heard, and Jenny too, and that people can take that tragedy and turn it into something.
Yeah,
that they actually call a gift, as one gentleman does. He calls it a gift that he got. And I was wow, I could not get there, I don't think. But I it's amazing what the human spirit can do.
Indeed.
Yeah, Rand, I'm with you, man. It never ceases to amaze me. People turn these real traumas right into you know, passion, you know, pain into purpose. They turn, you know, tragedies. And they own it. I mean, he's such a powerful guy. I mean, he's broken. I mean, there's no doubt he's still super glued back together, glass vase. But he's soldiering on. I got so much power. I mean, I got so much love from him. Like, he was such a great guy, like a magnanimous guy. But, whew.
Wow.
That's a fraternity I don't want to be in.
No kidding. Well, that's why we're doing what we're doing, because we want to help save people's lives, period.
And veterans are so exposed.
Yeah. And just tied to what you just said about this gentleman, there's a statistic that 50% of everyone in the U.S. is affected by suicide in some way, either by themselves, or someone in their family, or just the suicidal ideation or attempts.
Yeah.
And so it is a crisis that we're facing.
Yeah, that's tough. Tough to accept those kind of stats, right?
Yeah.
Well, we're fighting it.
Yeah.
I mean, the thoughts are fine. You know, it's just the actions and making sure people got know who to, you know, thoughts are normal. Having those thoughts is normal. Like you said, 50% of us, you know, almost everybody's had those thoughts.
Yeah.
Some version or iteration of it at some point.
Yeah.
And the idea is just to get through that day and get to another day.
Yes.
And find some good healing and get on it.
Yep.
Absolutely.
Guys, thanks for an awesome show. Thanks for everybody listening, supporting Mental Health Today, especially you hear the kind of stuff we're talking about, heavy stuff, but real impactful. I mean, we can save lives. Share this episode with somebody you care about, and we'll see you tomorrow. Thanks, you two. Hang on for 30 seconds. I'll see you on the other side.
Will do.
Yeah, loose, baby.
But we're about to go and make this vessel with these great professionals in public glass. We're not part of the community, but we're from the outer family of glass blowing. Yeah, we're going to go make a magical giant jar with optic lenses so that if you turn it, it changes all the time. So if you change the way you look at things, the things you look at change.